Today's rally in corn prices started in the overnight session and got a big-time boost from some big-time demand from China. All of a sudden, corn futures are back within range of contract highs, and soybean futures have erased about half of last week's losses, and wheat has climbed back on top of the short-term uptrend.
Live from the calm after the storm via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we'll talk with Chris Narayanan, a farm management specialist from the University of Tennessee Ag Institute. And right after the news, Varsity Joe Vaklovic from Standard Grain. I'm Handsome Newsman Davis Michelson, now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
Well done. Thank you, sir. Oh, yeah. Wow, man. If all we were going to do is put a summary on what happened in the grain markets today, it would still take the entire show, because these were impressive moves. We had impressive demand. There is talk of ethanol demand coming back into the market.
What?
This was, this was kind of It could have been a watershed day. Only time will tell on that, and we'll get perspective on the price action from Joe, and we'll get the longer term outlook from Chris coming up here in just a little bit. But man, oh man, today felt important. If for no other reason, Davis, it confirmed the move that we made to the upside yesterday.
Okay, I like that.
Yeah, and when we talked with Brian Grady, the editor of Pro Farmer, this morning on Markets Now in the first hour of AgriTalk, that's what he was most impressed by, was that the markets were confirming yesterday's big move to the upside, and wrote it right into the close. And this is the kind of stuff that I think can generate some additional upside momentum.
Dude,
we'll find out what
you sound. You sound very excited, very optimistic. Now, is there any chance here that this is a bit artificial? Are you on a snow scooper's high right now? You know, like a runner's high? Is this a snow scooper's high that's talking right now?
I'm not. Okay. I haven't even started.
Good man. Good man.
I was a little busy.
I haven't thrown a single scoopful myself. There you go. Yeah.
All right. Let's get to it. What you got going?
Well, let's see. Spillover support from corn got a lot of the credit for the strength in wheat futures today, but ongoing uncertainty about the supply of wheat coming out of Russia from mid-February through summer 2021 also made speculators very reluctant sellers. Declining winter wheat crop condition ratings in the state updates released Monday afternoon added some light support for prices. Technically, March soft red wheat futures yesterday spiked support of the January low, which basically erased selling interest from the market. Yeah. Resistance in March soft red is layered between 675 and the contract high of 693. July HRW wheat 12 cents higher, 641 and a quarter. July SRW jumped 13 and three quarter cents to 647 and one half. Sept spring wheat 11 cents higher, 637 today. Chip.
Yeah, a little ways to go to get to that contract high of 693 in the March contract, but we did close March SRW wheat at 665 today, so about 30 cents away. But with the way the chart setup is right now, there's not a lot standing between where we close today at 665 and that 693.
USDA this morning announced the sale of 1.36 million metric tons of U.S. corn for delivery to China in the current marketing year. A sale of nearly 103,000 metric tons to unknown destinations was also announced. The big one-time sale raised speculation that USDA's World Ag Outlook Board's cut to estimated corn exports in the January supply and demand report could be reversed in the February 9 update to the balance sheet, likely sending 2020 and 21 corn carryover below 1.5 billion bushels. Strength in the corn market was also tied to new information from ADM that China has bought about 200 million gallons of ethanol from the U.S. for delivery in the first half of the year. Chart watchers say the push to the upside in corn prices accelerated the move through 519 in front month futures. March corn futures 20¾ cents higher, baby. 5.32¼. May corn jumped 19½. 5.33¾. December corn 4.44½. Up 9¾ cents, Chip.
Yeah, I'd like to see some confirmation about that ethanol demand from China come back into the market. You know, I'm not saying that ADM is just talking their book here, but they are a big-time producer of ethanol. Man, if that is right, then it would suggest a return to getting a 10% blend back in all of those gallons that are consumed in China and Davis. That would be really good news.
Aggressive bull spreading in corn futures was also seen in soybean futures, with old crop contracts leading the way to the upside. Strong gains in soybean meal and bean oil also lifted weight off bean futures in today's session. Solid demand for U.S. beans limits selling interest, but crop watchers say that should be offset by improved growing conditions in South America. Chart watchers are eyeing resistance at the January 21 high of 1387. Chip, a close above that level would open upside potential to the contract high of 1436½. March bean futures 26¾ cents higher at 1370¼. May beans surged 26¾ cents to 1369½. Novi beans closed at 1148½, up 18¼ cents today. Chip.
Yeah, the momentum is coming back there. They've got more work to do than what the other markets do, or what the corn market does, I should say. But we are building that upside momentum in there, no question about it. I don't understand what happened in cotton. March cotton was 62 points lower, 81.71. Desk cotton fell 19 ticks to 78.69. I don't know what was going on in that market. Let's get to the livestock before we get to Chris in the next segment right now. Joe Vaklevic, Standard Grain. How you doing, Joe?
Doing good. What's up, Chip?
Well, the markets. A week ago today, the grains were at the start of a downside correction. Today is day two of a strong rally. What's the message here, Joe?
It's a very phenomenal price action. I mean, that was a very short-lived correction. It spanned, what, a week or less than that? And it's impressive to me that the news, especially on the demand side, continues to be really friendly. Despite the higher prices, despite what we know about South America, it's just overall the last several months have just been extremely impressive and exceptional for a lot of reasons.
Yeah, you know, it felt like the directive to both the corn and the soybean market following January supply and demand report was to cut demand, and the markets last week weren't acting like it, and they are certainly acting today and yesterday like, you know what, we better get going on this effort if we're going to slow down use.
Yeah, it's like they're trying, but they're not trying that hard. You know, ethanol margins have actually perked up. Ethanol prices are the best since, like, October of 2019, I think, are ethanol prices, and the margins are creeping back to, like, break even in a lot of areas of the country. Crush demand still good, exports still good. It's really phenomenal that it's been able to hold up despite this huge rally.
Yeah, don't be predictive in these markets, though, do you, Joe? You've still got to be reactive.
Oh, I realized a long time ago that I can't predict the direction of prices over the short term or over the long term. What I know now is that farmers are in a really good spot. Don't get overconfident though that this rally has to stick around forever, because it doesn't.
Fantastic counsel right there. Thank you, Joe. Appreciate it, buddy. That is Joe Vaklevic, Standard Grain. All right, coming up next, we're going to have a conversation with Chris Narayanan right here on AgriTalk.
Hey.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Smart Nutrition MAP plus MST. Learn how to boost your soil's performance and maximize ROI with Smart Nutrition MAP plus MST at smartnutritionmst.com.
Okay, now this just isn't true, Davis.
Yeah?
It's not true. Woody_46 says, AgriTalk, let's be honest, Chip Flory is hiring out the scooping. Busted. No. No way. I get out there and get in my Ranger with the blade on it. And
Well, and it won't be long, and you'll be able to set your army of grandchildren loose on that sucker in these situations, you know?
Wouldn't that be fun?
I mean, if each one just takes a single scoop shovel, it'll be done in no time.
I tell you what, I've got a quarter for every scoop. Let's go. Come on now, kids. We're going to be talking with Chris and Ryan in here in just a second. Let's get to the livestock news first, Davis.
Well, Chip, potential price pressure from bigger-than-expected increases in beef and frozen storage was offset by gains in boxed beef values. February live cattle were 47.5 cents higher, 117 even. April cattle firmed 15 cents to 123.10. Gains in corn prices sent March feeder cattle down $2.37.5 to 141.47.5. Snoutside pork stocks at the end of December were down 30% from year ago. That helped to limit selling in lean hog futures. Feb lean hogs 17.5 lower, 70.45, and April hogs up 32.5 cents, 76.95. Chip.
All right. Thanks, buddy. I can't wait no longer. Let's get this going. Chris Narayan is a farm management specialist, University of Tennessee. Chris, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, Chip. Good to hear your voice.
It's good to hear yours as well. What's going on down there at the University of Tennessee?
Oh, you know, they're just, of course, I'm a Texas Aggie, so I just watch the football coach changing of the guard there at the University of Tennessee with a mixture of amusement and wonder, and I suppose you'll get it at some point. But it's always fun to talk a little college football, even in the off season.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm willing to do that with you because Iowa State's part of that conversation, no question about it.
That sounds like a no comment, Chip.
There
I think you said
go.
No comment.
Shut him down.
See, that is my audio version of the Heisman pose right there.
Excellent. Excellent, man. Okay, let's get into these grain markets, and I want to start with the feed grains because my, oh my, oh my, 1.36 million metric ton, one-time sale of U.S. corn to China for delivery this year. Dude, that was a big number, but it feels more symptomatic of what is going on in China rather than a one-off, right?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, you've had, even pre-COVID, you know, between the African swine flu and then just the global, you know, shutting down, you had a lot of different competing uses of corn, right? And then people were putting their fuel purchases on hold. You didn't, of course, need as much ethanol, for example. I heard you and Joe talking about that a little while ago because nobody was driving, shutdowns and everything else. Now we're starting to come back, and I think what worries me about that is I would agree it's probably not a one-and-done deal, but I'd be very kind of cautious in where we think those bushels are going to go. Because if they have a choice between food and fuel, they're going to go back to the food supply. They have a huge population, and it doesn't take much for them to turn a switch. And so, you know, certainly I don't want to look a gift horse in the mouth, but at the same time, you've got to have to put it in perspective and be mindful of all the different ways that they can move that.
Right, right. The feed grain demand that we are seeing, and I'm going to throw wheat into that, Chris, because of the results of the auctions of their state-owned reserves of wheat in the last, 4 weeks, 5 weeks, something like that. We've been looking at a very high percentage of the wheat that was offered. So I'm going to throw wheat into the feed grain category. I think we should anyway, but this has got to be driven by the recovery in that hog herd over there, right?
That's the way I read it. You know, when I look at, you know, what was it, like two-thirds of the herd was being decimated and had to be liquidated, and then now they're trying to grow it back, right? I mean, you might be able to pump the brakes for a little while, and that's a pretty drastic way of doing it, but you still have a population to feed, and they're going to come back. And now that the economy and everything else is recovering, yes, I think they're going to need that. And that's why, you know, when you think about all the different uses for these grains, you got to be mindful that food supply for them is the utmost of importance.
Yeah. Chris, when we saw the positive GDP numbers out of China for 2020, when the rest of the world was in negative territory, your first instinct is to doubt it, is to say that's not really happening. But then you look at the trade that they are doing and the purchases that they're making, and all of a sudden you think, yeah, okay, they are acting like an economy that is getting stronger. Even if it's a little bit stronger, it is getting stronger in China, isn't it?
Yeah, so Chip, I mean, I think it's probably easier rather than looking at the hard and fast numbers, look at the trends and look at where everybody was and where everybody is. And what I mean by that is pre-COVID, the global economy as a whole was humming along pretty well, right? I mean, you had your problem spots like you always do, but by and large, we were, you know, doing pretty well. And it was economies like China that were doing better than, say, the U.S. or the European Union. And so now that things are starting to open back up, things, and then, of course, with the, we talked about the hog herd and other stuff where their individual kind of microeconomy is starting to grow. You know, is that the right number? That I couldn't tell you. Does it make sense from a trend standpoint? Absolutely, because I think it's coming back to where we were pre-COVID.
Okay. All right. Good enough. What else are you watching in these grain markets right now for direction, Chris? Are you looking at seasonalities? You looking at the South American crop? What are you focused on?
Yes. That's the short answer. Yeah. I'm looking at it all. I mean, you know, certainly we had a scare, and then, of course, we've had some beneficial rains down in South America. We'll see how it develops, you know, and then when we get into the Safrinha crop and everything else. But what's interesting here is we've had, you know, since the last quarter of Q4 of last year, you know, in the U.S., we've seen a contra-seasonal movement, right? Usually we'll have prices, you know, start to trail down and into the harvest and then slowly rise a little bit, you know, going into the end of the year, just trying to coax those bushels and get bases bid up a little bit because nobody wants to sell at harvest. But we're at a place now seasonally, obviously, pre-planting, that's way higher than normal. And, you know, when you think about the seasonality of corn and soybean prices, you know, we tend to start from about planting till, you know, the middle of June, roughly. We'll start worrying about the weather, and that'll put a bid under the market. And then once the market is convinced that we have a decent crop, it'll start falling again into harvest. And, of course, weather and planting intentions and acreage reports and all of that will kind of affect the magnitude of those movements. But you normally see a pretty good seasonal pattern. And, you know, we're at a point now where, you know, it probably makes sense to book at least a part of your new crop now. I mean, you don't want to get too far before you even plant it, but you know, you certainly want to start thinking about that because the market's giving you a gift right now, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, when you just simply look at your return on the cost that you're putting into the crop, if you're not at least considering some sales, what are you waiting for, right?
Exactly. I mean, look, I mean, I think the one wild card, and I'm glad you brought that up, is always be mindful of your break even or whatever risk tolerant minimum price you can do, right? I mean, everybody's operation is a little bit different, you know, so, you know, a number for one person is going to be different from somebody else. But yeah, you're at a point of, you know, this is where typically we'll start seeing, you know, prices flat, you know, from the end of last year and then start trailing down a little bit when the prospective plantings and the USDA outlook reports come out in the next 2 months. But then before the weather concerns take hold. So you've got an opportunity now where, you know, you don't normally see prices at this level on a seasonal basis. So, yeah, I mean, as long as you can, you know, make a profit, lock in, you know, not locking in a loss or anything like that, I would absolutely start considering some of that.
Does not knowing the spring price for revenue protection slow you down on those sales?
It does. I mean, obviously you don't, and that's what I mean about, you know, you don't want to get too far too fast.
Yeah.
And, you know, and on that one, I mean, that really is on a case by case basis, you know, so for anybody listening, you know, talk to your extension agents, talk to your marketing professionals, you know, make sure that the advice that you're listening to is tailored specifically to your farm. You know, I mean, it would be irresponsible for me to just kind of throw out a blanket. But yes, on that, for the insurance, I mean, that is the wild card. And I think that's, you know, you have a couple of factors at play. You've got the unknown of that. You've also got a really weird price movement for this time of year. And, you know, a lot of people are nervous about it. So, right. I mean, I think you've got to put it all into perspective.
Right, right. And, of course, there's the emotion of it all. Do we go ahead and start making sales now when making sales a year ago at this time maybe wasn't the smartest thing to do or the best thing to do. I don't know. If only there was some way to take some of the emotion out of all of this, Chris. Maybe some sort of systematic approach to it that we could go over. We're going to do that next. We're talking with Chris and Ryan, and here on AgriTalk. It's time for headline news featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers First Thing Today. Dr. Michael Cordonier says South American weather has turned the corner for now. That means conditions are improving. U.S. Ag Attaché in Argentina is less optimistic than USDA about Argentine corn production and wheat exports. Brazil's National Council of Highway Transportation, Davis is going to love this one. We're talking about the truck drivers here, is pushing ahead with plans for a February 1 strike. They're getting ready to strike in Brazil while operations slowly return to normal after the Argentine trucker strike is wrapping up. Winter wheat ratings faded during January for most U.S. states. Russian officials approve higher wheat export duty from March 1. Looks like things are really going to be slowing down on the flow of wheat out of Russia starting February 15 forward. Hey, give ProFarmer a try at tryprofarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone. Yeah, this guy might be a country music star. This singer here, he'd never make it as a newsman. You can't tell what he's saying. Nobody talks like that. Oh, it's infuriating. What did he say? Something about heard it through the grapevine? That's already a song. Now he's stealing songs? Chip!
Dude, I'm just gets worse and worse. I'm just willing to let you go off on this for a while.
Don't, because I could do this for a while. I'm getting fired up.
Yeah, I can hear it. I can hear it. Welcome back to AgriTalk. Glad that you could join us today. I'm Chip. That's Davis, you know, some music critic. Michelson.
You better believe it. You better believe it, brother.
We're talking to Chris and Ryan, and today, before we get back to Chris, go ahead and recap how the markets closed.
Chip, July, hard red winter wheat 12 cents higher, 641 and one quarter. July, soft red jumped 13 and three quarter cents, 647 and one half. March corn futures were 20 and three quarter cents higher, 532 and a quarter. May corn up 19 and one half, 533 and three quarters. March soybean futures 26 and three quarter cents higher, 1370 and one quarter. May beans up 26 and three quarters, 1369 and one half. March cotton 62 points lower, 81.71. February live cattle were 47 and one half cents higher at 117 even. March feeders down 237 and one half to 141.47 and a half. And February lean hogs off 17 and one half cents, 70.45. There's your quick market recap. Back to you.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Chris Narayanan is a farm management specialist for the University of Tennessee Extension. He's our guest today. We've been talking about the market outlook a little bit here. And Chris, I could kind of hear you getting ramped up when I started talking about taking the emotion out of some of these decisions, because I know that that is an area where you're like, listen, we need to make fact-based decisions in farming and take the emotion out of stuff. And it looks like you've got a program in place there in that manage program that does a lot of that for you, Chris.
You know, before I answer that, Chip, I just want to point out that you just accused me of getting emotional when you talked about taking emotion out of something.
Yeah, I know. I know. I felt pretty good about it.
That's fighting words. That's fighting words in Texas.
Of course, I'm not like Davis where I listen to fake country music, but that's a different, you know, story.
Oh, it just makes me nuts, Chris. It makes me nuts.
Bro country, there it is.
Oh, yeah. Don't even get me started, brother. You and I can have that conversation for a long, long time. But no, you're absolutely right, Chip. I mean, the manager program that we've got, you know, we start with help. We treat the farm as a business, and we help producers get an enterprise budget together. If they're running multiple crops or multiple enterprises, we can certainly factor that in so they have a enterprise level as well as a whole farm level of analysis. We also look at their financials, so their balance sheets, what assets they own, how much they owe on them, what their net worth is, And then where it really gets fun is we can start doing some projections, and we'll start with those budgets. We can, use whatever crop prices we can see, a snapshot. Okay, no beans are trading here today. Basis is averaging this time, at this level at that time of year, and kind of have a projection, as well as doing some kind of what if scenarios. So what if I, did double crop beans this year, or I planted more corn, or, whatever that is. But part of the thing work that I've do, or I'm trying to develop is what I found in the 8 months that I've been on board is farmers to varying degrees have some level of knowledge of risk management and marketing plans and all that sort of stuff. And certainly there's no shortage of folks out there that will, talk to you about the market and where they think it's going to go and all that. But I think where the disconnect is sometimes how to put it all together. Mm-hmm. And what I'd like to do over time, and I look at other extension services too, and try to put it all together and say, okay, you know what, can we do like a standalone, let's introduce the concepts and then give them a chance to practice where there's no real bushels being traded. It's just, on paper, but we'll use real life examples. Right. So, part of that is putting together a marketing plan, and there's two parts of that. There's before the harvest, like we were talking about before the break, when you use your seasonal trends and say, okay, prices tend to rise a little bit in the springtime into the middle of the year. So maybe set, depending on where your break even is, you can set price targets or even deadlines on the calendar. So every 15 cents or 20 cents or every 4 to 6 weeks or whatever that is, and we're going to start pricing it at a regular interview and somewhere between 25 to no more than 50% of the crop. But then be nimble enough. Obviously we talked about the insurance, in the last segment, as well as, times like, this year when we have prices much higher than you normally would see it. So maybe you do a little bit more than you do or change your scheme a little bit, but at the same time, you want to keep that discipline and make sure that you know what you're locking in.
Right. Right. I want to come at this, at this program from just a little bit of a different angle, if I could here for just a bit, Chris. And manage is an acronym: measuring, analyzing, navigating, and achieving goals effectively. That last bit there, achieving goals effectively and setting goals in your marketing plan so that you realize that, hey, if I can get a 10% ROI, or return on what I put into producing a crop, that means that I'm going to be able to do X in the year ahead. That's what makes this, in my opinion, kind of a step above some of the other plans or systems out there, because it's goal-driven. When you turn your marketing plan into a goal-driven plan, it's a whole lot easier to follow the plan than to second guess it later, isn't it?
I agree. And I think where it really, if you really want it to be effective, using that last word, you've got to write it down and look at it. And I'm not saying that you've got it every week that you're changing your plan and you're moving with every whim of the market, but write down not only what your plan is, the intervals, the price targets, write down the rationale. Why are you picking this? It's because we normally see, at X percent move this time of year, and so I want to take advantage of that, or whatever it is. And then when you start executing your plan, write down what you did and why you did it. If it changed from the plan a little bit, all right, that's fine. You have a good reason. Write it down, because the most important thing about this is you want to build out a history. And what works this year, may not work next year. But the idea is you do this enough times, then over the course of a longer term, you can go back and say, hey, this year kind of feels like it was in 2020 or whatever. And you have at least a guide to fall back on and say, okay, this is what I did last year or that year, and this is why it worked or why it didn't work. And then over time, you just get more and more effective because you're becoming more comfortable with it. You're becoming a student of market, and you're not as kind of like, all right, how do we, you have a starting point. You've done it a few times. You're not trying to start from scratch at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. And that helps you to understand that, hey, if we know where we want to end up, if all of a sudden we decide that instead of taking the direct route, we're going to take a more scenic route, we can go ahead and do that. As long as you end up where you want to end up, you've got some flexibility in all of that along the way. But boy, again, I'll say it, just the simple fact that it is goal driven will. I hope people understand what I'm saying, because once you include goals, and not only a goal of a 10% return, that's not a goal. A goal of a 10% return so that I can put a down payment on another farm, that's a goal. And all of a sudden, it just becomes that much more effective in how you put your marketing plan together. Are people putting this managed program to use for you, Chris?
Yeah. I mean, look, we've worked with a variety of different producers. Some of them just want a financial health check. And, you know, I've done a few of those this month already. So I've got a few more that I've got to do in the next week or two. Others are struggling and they want to, you know, get better marketers. And we'll go into more depth of what we just talked about, our marketing plans and that sort of stuff.
Yep.
We also have a good crop of, no pun intended, but we have a good, you know, group of beginning farmers as well. I actually had a Marine veteran that reached out to me that's still out in North Carolina, but he's moving back to the area later this year, and he wanted to kind of get the ball rolling and start with budgets and stuff. So we're doing that over Zoom. And so we have a nice variety of different folks that, you know, have different goals, things that they want to get out of it, you know, but bottom line, you know, I can't stress enough that record keeping is what's really makes it effective, because you've got something to look back on and say, okay, this is what worked or just didn't work. And
that's right.
How can I modify it for the next year?
Love it. Love it. Only got about a minute left, a little bit more than that, but I got to ask, what's your take on the overall health of agriculture right now?
You know, I think overall, I think we're in pretty good shape. I mean, certainly these prices are helping, you know, but be mindful of it. Last year we saw a big dip because of COVID. And so, for example, when you have 40% of the corn crop going to ethanol and people are not driving,
right,
you know, that we pull up the bushels, now people are coming back. So, you know, I think we're in good shape, but I think this is, you know, more than ever, you really have to pay attention and study the markets and understand these trends and understand the interconnectedness of everything. And I mean, it is a global trade at this point. It's not just your corner of Iowa or out here in West Tennessee or something like that. You've got to be mindful of what's going on around the country and around the world.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like I talked about with Joe, when you get to these prices, it feels like the easy part of the rally is over. And if this market's going to continue to work to the upside, it's going to be tougher going forward. So you've got to be reactive You've got to be reactive and take advantage of the opportunities that the market is offering you. Chris, we're going to have to do it again sometime here real soon because we're out of time. Unbelievable. Thanks, man.
Hey, good to talk to you, buddy.
It was good to talk with you, too. That's Chris Narayanan. He's a farm management specialist there at the University of Tennessee. Davis and I'll wrap it up when we come back here in just a moment.
We've cleared the schedule for you. Give us a call at 855-482-5524 and join the conversation.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk. Chip, got Davis with me, wrapped up a good conversation right there with Chris Narayanan from the University of Tennessee. I've mentioned this a couple of times, and I'm going to ask you to go back and do it again. Okay? There are different ways to look at a daily price chart. One of them is a bar chart. Another way is a candlestick chart. And then you can take the highs and the lows out and just look at the close only. All right?
Okay.
And the close only, of course, then becomes a line chart. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, take a look at the price action in corn and then lay it over timeline, everything. Lay it over the 2008, 9, 10, 11, 12 on a weekly basis corn chart. And the way that the current market action, and again, shout out to Clark Neighbors, BIS Commodities. He's the one that tipped me on or that put me onto this. And every now and then he'll send me another little reminder and we'll have a real quick conversation about it on email about how is this similar, how is this dissimilar to what we saw back in 2008 when a really, really impressive market was just getting started. But the timing is so good. Now, all I've been talking about is the corn and how well the trend in corn is lining up with what we saw in 2008. But look at soybeans, too. All we've done is we are starting from a higher level, but the pattern is matching up so well, Davis, with what we saw in 2008. It blows me away. Now, people like to remember that, boy, 2008 was the launching pad, and off it went from there. Nope. The last time we had cash corn trade in, like, the 275 range was in the fall of 2009. I mean, it was a tough market. It was a tough market in the fall of 2009. We had a weird growing season with a lot of cool temperatures and a lot of moisture, and everybody thought that it was just going to turn into this huge crop. And we talk about the 2019 and maybe the 2020 corn crops being overestimated. You want to talk about a crop that was overestimated? That was the 2009 crop. I will stand on that hill and fight for a long time because it created problems that needed to be fixed for 2-3 years to come after that.
What kind of problems?
Well, with the stocks, for one thing. We'd get these movements in quarterly grain stocks numbers on corn that were basically unpredictable. And that shouldn't happen with grain stocks. Grain stocks.
That sounds a little familiar now, too. Maybe not so much
about,
with the corn.
Yep. Yeah. As we talked about with, after the January quarterly grain, after the September quarterly grain, after the June quarterly grain stocks reports, the last three in a row, we've talked about why didn't the trade get this right? Where did the trade miss it? Well, maybe the trade had it right and USDA was playing catch up on some things. Well, I'm telling you, in 2009, go a year later, in 2010 and 2011, after a shorter than expected 2010 crop, we were doing some big time catch up because the problem that was created in 2009 by overestimating that corn crop was amplified by a poor finish to that 2010 crop. Okay. So if we're looking for some similarities, they are there, but look at the price action, look at the trends, the dip that we just had, Davis, happened in 2008 at the same time. The recovery, it got started at about the same time. So look at it. I'm not saying that we're just going to, get out the, what was the thing called where you had the three sheets of paper and one was like an ink mimeograph machine? Right? Am I saying that right? I used to run the church bulletins on one of those
things. Come out
and they
smell so good. Yeah.
Make
yourself an extra copy of the test for the teacher. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
I know what you mean.
But I'm not saying that it's going to be just a carbon copy of what we saw in 2008, but there's enough similarities there on the price action that it makes me want to go back and look at some of the Pro Farmer newsletters from 2009 that are looking back a little bit, that explained why what happened, all the money flow into the markets, into the commodity markets, out of the equities and into the commodities. The increase in money supply. Think about what was happening with the housing crisis. Okay. At that time, we were talking about bailing out AIG and some of the other mortgage holders and everything like that. I don't see that happening right now. I don't see inflation being a huge, huge issue because they're just, interest rates are going to stay low and the Fed and Yellen are going to accept some inflation without trying to put the brakes on it. But just the price action, boy, it's really something to look at. And I want to thank Clark again for pointing that out to me. I think it's pretty important stuff. The National Weather Service 6 to 10 day outlook is calling for above normal precipitation. There's not much to look at when it comes to the temperatures, but we're looking at above normal precipitation over the next, well, over the next 6 to 10 days and the next 8 to 14 days. So just a bit of a heads up on that. We could be looking at a bit more of an active pattern in the U.S. And I think we're starting to see that now.
Yes, so. My phone agrees. Confirmed.
All right.
Confirmed.
All right. Hey, tomorrow afternoon, an analyst that we haven't had on for quite a while is going to be back. Because he thinks the grain markets have got a story to tell again. And that's Gary Stern. He's the open interest analyst. Remember that?
Yes.
Yeah.
From San Francisco, right?
Yes.
Isn't he out of Frisco?
Yes, he is. We're going to be taking a different look. Tomorrow morning, Ken Ferry, Missy Bauer, and Steve from Illinois, and Dennis from Iowa, right here on AgriTalk.